But this was definitely an eye-opener. I thank you for joining us on Flashpoints.
Thank you so much for having me. Appreciate your work.
This week on Religion for Life, we ask, who is really killing God? Atheists or fundamentalist preachers?
For example, one former Christian said to me, quote, "I hated hating people."
Rodney Wilson analyzes deconversion in his book, Killing God, Christian Fundamentalism and the Rise of Atheism. Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
Yeah. This is how to kill God, Holocaust, Crusade, Zionism, Jihad.
Kibbu Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of music, nature, and storytelling, an experiential weekend workshop from January 8th through the 10th at Cedar Ridge Retreat and Conference Center in Vernonia, Oregon. Storytelling as a practice broadens our perspective and helps us understand the significance of our experiences. This workshop teaches the roots of storytelling and delves into the storyteller's mind. No prior experience required. And the deadline for registration is December 18th. Again, that's Music, Nature, and Storytelling, a weekend workshop January 8th through the 10th at Cedar Ridge Retreat in Vernonia, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is proud to host the entire series of the podcast, The Spirit of the Forest, an audio drama, dark comedy, and semi-musical outsider art program. It's created by independent producer Dan Krall from Corvallis, and the program reflects upon the sadness, the absurdity, and normalcy of modern life. Listen to The Spirit of the Forest on demand at kboo.fm/thespiritoftheforest.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 11:01 a.m. Coming up next on the Radio Zine, we'll be speaking with Iraq vet and writer Roy Scranton discussing his book, Learning to Die in the Anthropocene. Followed by the Six Partnership show with Oregon Community Media, with a focus on housing issues and the housing crisis taking place all over the state of Oregon. A reminder to everyone who has not yet become a member of the KBOO Foundation, all new members and all continuing members who increase over last year's pledge, the difference will be matched. That's right, all the way through the end of December. Double your impact with no extra pennies, nickels, or dimes out of your own pocket at kboo.fm. You click where it says donate today. So keep it locked right here, your community radio, KBOO Portland. Whoa, wow, isn't that hot? So we'll have a special substitute program for the Radio Zine. We'll be hearing from... Okay, we've been unable to reach Roy Scranton, so we will instead be airing Sprouts. That's right, right here on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly news magazine produced by this community station and many others across the country. Today, KGNU Boulder, Denver brings you portraits of Alzheimer's.
You start to do something and you can't go on because you don't know what to do next.
She couldn't make the part of her brain that would speak do anything, and so, I thought that a lot of times she was there and paying attention and listening.
These and many other portraits of Alzheimer's. Stay tuned. At Boulder Community Hospital, a volunteer takes her therapy dog to visit patients. Her dog is a golden retriever named Watney.
Make a good sit. Nice sit. Do you want to pet her?
Oh. You're a nice dog.
Yeah. You like dogs?
Yes, and I'm trying to get out of this damn place.
Well, hopefully you'll get out soon.
The woman that Watney's visiting today has been diagnosed with pneumonia, yes, which the hospital staff is treating with good success. But the woman also suffers from an increasingly common problem which currently has no cure. It's a progressive brain disorder that's adding to her worry about being hospitalized. The woman is confused and angry about several things, which might frighten some people into avoiding her. But the golden retriever keeps gazing at her with big brown eyes.
You're a nice dog.
She is. Her name is Watney.
Watney?
Yep. She's 5 years old, and she just loves to be loved.
I can tell that. Yeah. You're a nice dog.
She says you can do that for an hour.
You're a nice dog.
Well, it looks like you've got a roommate that's sleeping, so we won't go
over. I don't know. I'm trying to get the hell out of here.
No, I can imagine. It's not much fun. All right. Well, you take care of yourself, okay? You'll get out very soon.
I know I will. Yes. I'm doing it damn quick.
Yes.
I'm Shelley Schlender. Alzheimer's is a neurodegenerative disease that destroys brain tissue, causing loss of mental functions. The reason it happens remains unknown, although most likely it involves a person's genes, how a person lives, and environmental toxins. According to the National Alzheimer's Association, this disease is the most frequent reason for dementia in the elderly. Many people live into their 80s and beyond without any symptoms of dementia. But Alzheimer's is more likely as people get older. And since the American population is aging, more people are likely to be living with the disease. What's it like? And what are ways to reach out to someone who has this illness? Up next, three stories about Alzheimer's, one about a music group, one about unconditional love, and one story that's metaphysical. We'll start with the music group, where the mandolin player, Ed Fetzner, is tuning up over at Fraser Meadows Manor in Boulder.
We frequently have I can't think of his name, Pete Franklin, who plays harmonica, and he also is an Alzheimer's. So we have two people that we're trying to keep going as long as we can with music. And so that's about the size of it.
Can you explain what you mean by that in terms of trying to keep going as long as you can?
Well, my wife has Alzheimer's, so I am very familiar with the syndrome. She has had it for 12 years, and she's at the point right now where she doesn't speak or talk. And fortunately, these folks aren't at that point. One of these days, they probably won't be able to do this because of the Alzheimer's syndrome is going to just, you know, stop the ability to perform anymore. So as long as they're able, and we're going to do it with them.
Do you think it's helpful to everybody?
Music is helpful, especially to Alzheimer's people. It seems like that's one thing that can get through to them more than anything else. And you'll see Alzheimer's people who don't respond to anything else. When you play music for them, they're obviously their body motions, they're tapping their foot, or they're doing something that obviously they responded.
As Ed talks, other residents from Fraser Meadows Manor gather. There's a low hum of conversation. One woman is wheeled in, looking down with a worried face as she clutches a large stuffed toy. Another woman gets wheeled in, but she goes to the performance area. Her name is Vivian. She has advanced dementia. Her sister's pushing the wheelchair.
Where do we go?
Right there.
Most of the time, Vivian has trouble speaking or making sense of things. But it all changes when she's at a piano.
Can you reach your pedals okay, Viv? Usually sit on that bench, but I think today she's happier in the chair. So.
That's Vivian in her wheelchair playing the piano with Ed on his mandolin. Later, Vivian's sister asks her to explain how much music is part of their lives.
Honey, tell Shelley.
Hi, Vivian.
Hello.
Long ago you started playing.
Oh. Well, that's good that she kept it up. I'm glad.
When you were a tiny girl.
Bless her heart.
Yeah, she played for church when she was 8 years old. And that was doing very well, and she's played ever since.
What's your favorite songs? What songs do you like to play?
Oh, I don't think I have a favorite, because I just have to play. When somebody sings or plays ahead of me, I have to play to hold them out. So that's how I come by it. Yeah.
So it's just naturally in your hands?
What?
The music and the songs are just naturally part of you.
Yes, yeah, they are.
Vivian's friends in the band say that music means something special to all of them.
Yeah, it's music.
That's a good way to look at it.
It is. I think it cheers us up sometimes.
Yeah, maybe so.
Kind of.
I think we need it once in a while.
Yeah.
Vivian, Ed, and her friends in the band devote most of their performance to being the backup for a sing-along at Fraser Meadows. As they play, the whole room gets livelier. The woman holding the stuffed toy looks up, her face more relaxed, and then she falls into a peaceful sleep. It's a joyous time at Fraser Meadows, but there's often poignancy here, as a staff member points out.
Remember so vividly being on the Alzheimer's unit, and one of our ladies, who was someone who had lots of energy and walked and walked and walked all day long, and I saw her stopping by a mirror on the wall, and I could see from a distance that she was talking to the lady in the mirror. So I came closer to her and heard her say, "You look so familiar, but you look so old." And to me, that said, that was a familiar face to her. She had no idea that it was herself. But for a moment, there was something familiar, and she was carrying on a reasonable conversation with someone that she thought she had just met in her walk. But we will see glimmers like that, where bits of real insight come through what is very often a foggy kind of thought process. And it does take special people to work on the Alzheimer's unit. People who enjoy, people who can deal with erratic behavior, repetitious behavior, and still enjoy and come back and love the work that they do. So it's a special place.
An Alzheimer's unit that has frequent sing-alongs is a special place. Wherever someone is with Alzheimer's, it's a special place for the friends and family that know the person. It's a place that sometimes is hard to be, and sometimes it's where wisdom can be gained. I've had more awareness of the disease in recent years because my mother-in-law has Alzheimer's. Charlotte was diagnosed about 5 years ago, just after she and Harold celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary. 3 years ago, they drove here from Kansas at a time when they were downplaying their concerns about Charlotte's increasing problems with getting lost and being confused. Harold had confided that Charlotte was even having trouble remembering that he's her husband. Whoever he was, she knew that she loved him. While they were here in Colorado, I asked if it would be okay if I interviewed her about Alzheimer's. Both Harold and Charlotte said yes. As Charlotte talked, my husband Greg sat in a big red chair, and Harold stood, looking out the window.
I'm willing to answer questions about some subject and tell you what I think. Is that what you want?
Yeah. You told me once that someone can get really mad about having this kind of disease, or they can be at peace about it.
Oh, I don't think any kind of illness should be something that you would get angry about. I sometimes feel like that. Maybe I feel like I'd want to be angry, but I see how foolish it is, how unproductive it is, how it's not going to teach anybody around you how to react to something that's disturbing.
How would you explain what Alzheimer's is to somebody?
Well, it's pathetic, very pathetic. When you answer something that's clear off beat, when you answer a question, I think that's the main thing about it that's disturbing. And then you start to do something and you can't go on because you don't know what to do next, and you have to stop. Same way within speaking. You start out and the telephone will ring, or someone will walk in the room and say hi, and you won't know where you were at all if you have Alzheimer's. Oh, I don't know that the way words leave you right in the middle of a sentence is probably the most disturbing thing to me so far.
Is it okay if I ask what you think of Harold?
Oh, I think he's just super good. If I had enough time, I could make it sound better. The way I feel about him, he's just everything to me, for one thing. I can always count on him. I can trust him. I'd just rather be around him than anybody I know or have ever known. The only one who comes anywhere near would be my father when he was living. I don't think of Harold as a father figure, though, at all. He's just a companion, very close companion, and I like to discuss things with him. And sometimes I talk too much, and I think other times he's glad for my bringing out talk between us. I think I've done this enough now.
Thanks for letting me do this.
That was Charlotte in 2002 when she and Harold drove from Kansas to Colorado for the last time. A few months after this visit, Charlotte moved into an Alzheimer's unit in their small Kansas town. It happens to be across the street from where she and Harold had lived for many years. Charlotte no longer remembers that the building she can see from her window used to be her home. Harold walks across the street every single day, and they spend the afternoon together. Sometimes they sit in a porch swing and watch the birds. A while back, they could still go out on walks. Greg and I visited them over the 4th of July 2 years ago, and we spent an afternoon at a prairie park where a strong Kansas wind blew, the birds sang, and there were bales of hay. Harold found a bale of hay for Charlotte to sit on. He told us stories about his childhood, their days courting, and mostly Charlotte listened silently. It was a big change from past times when Charlotte had done most of the talking. It was only when Harold started to sing that Charlotte started having more to say.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas. Bing Crosby. They don't make songs like they used to.
No.
Charlotte liked to listen to the hit parade on Saturday evenings.
Mm-hmm. Always.
And she knew all of the songs.
What about Low in the Gravy Lay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that Low in the Gravy Lay? I mean, that makes it sound like gravy.
No, it's low in the, what's buried underground in the grave.
No, the story is that Charlotte thought it was gravy.
For a long time.
You know, when she was a little girl, she thought it was low in the gravy he lay.
That would have been kind of messy.
Yeah.
That's like that song, Mersey Doats.
Mm-hmm.
And Doats.
That was a popular one when Greg was younger.
And little lambs eat.
And dozy doats and little lambs eat ivy.
And something eats ivy too. Can't remember it exactly, the rest of that.
It sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Mares eat oats and does eat oats and little lambs
eat ivy.
A kid'll eat ivy too.
That means a little lamb.
Okay.
A kid'll.
Wouldn't you?
Kid'll eat ivy too, wouldn't you?
After this small sing-along, Harold offered to tie Charlotte's shoe and help her back to the car.
Good boy.
And I've been pleasing you all these years.
Oh, a lot of years.
And I'm glad of it. Well, I better restack the bale.
Now, what am I going to put my hands on here?
Here, just give me your hand. Give me your hands. Your answer true. I'm half crazy, oh, for the love of you. Where's the rest of it go, Charlotte?
I've forgotten.
You might be some kind of lady.
That was 2 years ago. Today, Charlotte can no longer go on walks. She spends most of her time sleeping, and when Harold visits, sometimes she doesn't even know that he's there. It's a painful time that's common for many families today, since over 4 million Americans now have Alzheimer's, and the numbers are growing. One of the most remarkable books about this phase of life and dying is the Ozaki Book of the Dead by Elmer Green. It's a slow read and sometimes a hard one, but it may be worth the effort. You see, Elmer Green is a biophysicist who worked at the Menninger Clinic in Kansas for many years, where he and his wife Alice pioneered the science of biofeedback and delved into the study of parapsychology. The Ozaki Book of the Dead is subtitled Alzheimer's Isn't What You Think It Is, because it's a diary about Elmer caring for Alice during her 7 years with Alzheimer's. While watching her slowly slip away from regular life, he came to believe that Alice began living in two worlds at the same time, the normal physical world and the afterlife world, which in Tibet is called the Bardo.
It's a theory you could be very skeptical about, but it raises many intriguing possibilities. Elmer's daughter is Pat Norris, who's the past president of the Biofeedback Society of America. She talks now about her dad's book and about her mother.
What's of interest, I think, that you might be interested in and that was interesting in the book, and that's kind of the purpose of talking about the Alzheimer experience, is where is the person as the brain starts to shut down?
Where do they go?
Yeah. Where did they go, or what are they experiencing? And others occasionally have done this. I don't know if no one that I know of as explicitly or much as my mom, and that is she was able right up until the end to do what we might call channel herself. Do you know what channeling is?
Tell me how you describe that.
Okay. Channeling, as I would describe it, whether or not a person believes in this is another matter, but is when a person is able to set aside their own programming ego, maybe go into a light trance or just and allow allow another. Let me say that when I say another, it could always be our high self. It could always be our highest, in a way I have to say deepest unconscious, because in this theory, the high self is always present and always observing, and we hardly ever even notice it or pay any attention to it or think about it at all. We're engaged in this physical universe around ourselves here, and we just don't pay attention in a vertical dimension a lot of the time. Even when people go to church and pray and all this stuff, they're not paying attention in a higher dimension. They're praying out vertically, just like they wash clothes out vertically and make dinner out vertically and have good wishes toward other people out vertically and give money or tithe out vertically. It's seldom really I'm sorry I used the wrong word the whole time. I meant to say out horizontally. It's out into the world, out into the environment, and hardly ever in the vertical dimension. Oh, and it's, the reason I'm talking about this, we come back to it, is you asked me what's my definition of channeling. And so it's that the person kind of lays aside, they might go in a trance, but not necessarily. Their mind that's making judgments and thoughts and all this stuff just lays it aside, and another, which could be their high self, as we were just talking about, or could be another entity, a teacher. It could be, sometimes people think they channel Jesus even.
Mm-hmm. They're both, all mm-hmm. of these extrapersonal and transpersonal mm-hmm. are states where some people would say it has to do with total craziness
mm-hmm.
when
that's
someone
true.
Does these things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But others would say that sometimes that's when someone's at their clearest. And with your mom,
mm-hmm.
When she had Alzheimer's, that's a state where people don't have mm-hmm. normal access to their memories.
That's right.
And they don't have normal access to making sense of what the current environment is.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they can't use their body to walk or talk or
that's right.
eat properly.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And when she was at that stage and therefore really able to step aside or stepped aside all the time, she was able to channel herself, or her high self was able to still use her body to speak through it. And she did a lot of talking and a lot of teaching about what she was experiencing. It would be short, and I saw one or two sentences and that's all, but she had real conversations with Elmer, but maybe they'd last 3 or 4 minutes or something.
Did she ever have conversations with you?
No, only sentences.
Sentences. Oh,
I'll
so sometimes she would say something that was so
mm-hmm.
much on the point,
mm-hmm.
you felt that for that moment she was right there with you.
And this was at a time, she wasn't doing that when she was still talking, that I know of. When she started to do it is when she was really gone, when she didn't make eye contact anymore, when if you put something in her mouth she would chew, but she didn't lift a fork to her mouth anymore, when she just was, when she had to be tied in the chair because she was bent over like that. And it was really pretty much end stage. It was like the last year of her life, and maybe the last couple, when she, and then she would be so clear, and out would come her regular voice,
And she would say things that she was experiencing or what it was like where she was, which in essence, I think what Elmer perhaps already knew something about, but certainly came to believe, is that almost all her consciousness is in what he calls the bardo, which is the place we always have part of our consciousness there, but usually can't pay any attention to it. And when we die, that's where we find ourselves. We could call it heaven or one of the heavens or the in-between or the bardo or many names, but when we leave our body, then we're in this place, and that's where she was, almost all her consciousness was.
Is that perhaps the place we go when we dream? The bardo?
It's many people think so. I happen to be one of them, yeah. But well, then some dreams.
So all of these possibilities are out there. And one that's very concrete for people is that when they have a loved one that is in a stage where physically they aren't there in the same way as they anticipated, to have the faith that they're somewhere.
That's right.
And every now and then they'll come back and visit if they can.
If they can, and occasionally they do. We've heard other stories, even sometimes, that it just happened once. First time anything like this happened to me with Mom was when probably I hadn't heard her say anything for 5 months, 6 months, maybe longer at all. And I was feeding her, and she would eat, but, you know, she never reached for the food, and she didn't really seem to open her eyes, but when the spoon came to her mouth, she opened her mouth, and she chewed the food. And when I would feed her, I'd often talk to her. And so one time I was prattling on about how that I thought that she might very well be listening to me or hearing every word that I said, and that she understood and she would like to talk to me, but it was just hard for her to do that because she couldn't make the part of her brain that would speak do anything. And so, I thought that a lot of times she was there and paying attention and listening, and she went like this. Can't you tell the difference? And my hair just went up on the back of my head like that. Oh, Mom, no, I can't tell the difference. I can't, but I wish I could, but she was gone.
So in that brief moment, she straightened up. Mm-hmm. She looked right at you.
Turned her head, looked right in my eyes, as clear as anything. It was like her dear self I'd communicated with so many times. And she said, kind of a strange communication in a way, but can't you tell the difference?
Between when I'm here and when I'm not.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Only at that sentence could I tell the difference, and what a difference. I mean, literally, it was just like if the plates sat up and started talking to us. Well, you know, there was a famous Chinese sage, I think, who said, after a while I get to the point where I don't know if I'm a human being dreaming that I'm a butterfly or a butterfly dreaming that I'm a human being.
I'm not saying that again.
Okay. Eventually it gets to the point where I don't know if I am a human being dreaming that I'm a butterfly or a butterfly dreaming that I'm a human being.
Even though her mother died.
Oh, yes. Sprouts Radio, courtesy of the Pacifica Network, on your community radio, KBOO Portland. It's coming up on 11:39 a.m. Coming up, we hear the sixth partnership show with Oregon Community Media. It's focusing on housing crisis all over Oregon and housing issues in general. Meanwhile, to hear the whole program that we just had to kind of cut the last few minutes of, you can check out pacificanetwork.org/sprouts or soundcloud.com/pacificanetwork/sets/sprouts. And now, sixth partnership show with Oregon Community Media with a focus on housing on your community radio, KBOO Portland.
Mm-hmm.
welcome to the sixth partnership show of Oregon Community Media, independent community radio and media working in collaboration to better serve Oregon. This time around, you'll hear about housing issues and the housing crisis taking place all over the state of Oregon. Participating this time are KWSO Warm Springs, KPOV Bend, KSKQ Ashland, and KBOO Portland. I'm Erin Yankee from KBOO, collator and host for this episode. Stay tuned. We'll start with a personal testimonial from Charu, Colorado, an artist in Ashland, Oregon, who just had her rent raised by about 50%. Thanks to KSKQ and Deb Van Poolen for this interview.